Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, regular listeners, you may have spotted that we've changed our name. It's now Honey & Co. The Food Sessions.
So if you hear this sound, it's just us making dinner.
Well, that and the fact that we're not allowed to use our old title anymore.
It's just been a bit of a thing, but don't worry about it.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Just don't touch my face.
Who run this mother? Who run this mother? Who run this mother? Who run this mother? Hi, everyone, and welcome to Honey & Co. I'm Sarit Packer. This series is called Who Run the World? And we're celebrating women in food.
So really excited to have Dorina Allen with us tonight. She is the powerhouse behind Ballymaloe Cookery School. We've been there quite a few times, my husband and I. We always want to go back because it's the most amazing place.
I don't want to go back.
We want to live there, yeah.
We don't want to go back here.
I'm going to ask Dorina to describe it in a second. But Dorina is kind of behind training so many chefs that work in the industry today. So many of our chefs along the years have come from Ballymaloe. It's a really inspiring and kind of beautiful place to learn how to cook in. We're so excited to have Dorina here. We're going to be talking about women in food. We're going to be talking about her new book. And basically, we're just going to try and get an invite to Ireland again. So, everyone help me in welcoming Dorina.
Thank you very much.
Can you kind of describe Ballymaloe to us a bit?
Oh, my goodness me. Well, we're right out in the country, out in East Cork, very close to the sea. The mother house, so to speak, is Ballymaloe House, which is a country house hotel, which was, I think, probably the first country house hotel in the British Isles. Maybe Sharrow Bay was about the same time. My father-in-law was a farmer and a horticulturalist and an agriculturalist. And they had lived in this huge, big house. And any of you who live in huge, big houses, you know the dilemma of trying to keep the roof on it and so on. So when the children had all gone off to boarding school and Martel, who couldn't, by the way, cook at all when they got married, my father-in-law was used to sort of joke that they learned a lot about each other on their honeymoon. Yeah. He learned she couldn't cook at all and she learned he played bridge a lot. So when they came home from their honeymoon, the story goes that Ivan showed Myrtle how to scramble eggs, and that was the beginning of it. So she went from there literally to running a restaurant eventually. And I know I'm not answering your question. I suddenly realize I'm not answering the question, but giving you a little bit of background. And Myrtle then knew that when the children came along, it was really important to feed them nourishing, wholesome, delicious food to help them not to get colds and flu and all that in the winter. Because at that stage, my mother was the same. She was really knew how important it was to feed us well. Myrtle used to say that they were told to feed the children like fighting cocks, basically. Then she opened a restaurant in Ballymaloe in this house that had already had 16 bedrooms in it in 1984, I think. And she just fed the guests the same food as she fed her family. And the children had heard a bit of chat about this. And eventually a letter came to boarding school saying, we've opened the restaurant. And I remember Timmy, who's now my husband, said that they couldn't wait to get home for holidays because they thought their mother would be cooking proper restaurant food like mixed grills and steak and chips and everything. And they were disgusted to find that she was feeding the guests exactly the same food as she fed them. But basically, Ballymaloe House is in the middle of a 400-acre farm, and they had a herd of Jersey cows. They made their own ice cream, a beautiful Jersey cream. They had their own pigs, so really good pork, and of course a 2-acre walled garden, so all these beautiful vegetables and everything came up. And then we're very close to the sea. There's a little fishing village called Ballycotton very close to us. So Myrtle, when she opened the restaurant, you know, she had no training apart from what she'd learned over the years, but she had beautiful produce always. So her food is very simple. She wrote the menu every day, and this was in 1964 when men were chefs and women certainly could get into the top kitchens. That was one of my problems. But you can...
Because this is kind of the important part.
Oh, yes, I know what I want to say about...
you started in a kitchen, isn't it?
Exactly. So basically, she wrote the menu every day, depending on what was in the gardens and the greenhouses and so on. And then I came from hotel school in Dublin, having been, again, at boarding school, and my lovely Dominican nuns. I was educated by Dominican nuns. And at that stage, in the early 60s, they were very visionary nuns, and they were very much encouraging us girls, and it was all girls in my boarding school, to have a proper career, to do law, medicine, science or something like that. And all I wanted to do was to cook. That's all I knew anything about, or to garden, because I'm the eldest of 9 children and lived in a little tiny village in the middle of Ireland in Culhale and County Leash. And we had a kitchen garden, and we had a house cow, a Kerry cow. So we had our own lovely raw milk and chickens and eggs and lovely vegetable garden and everything. My father was the village merchant, and my grandfather, I'm the daughter of a shopkeeper. Was it Margaret Thatcher was the daughter of a shopkeeper? I forget. Anyway, it gives you a lot of skills, basically, because you're running in and out of the shop. You know, at that stage, tea and sugar would come. Tea used to come in tea chests before any of you were born. And sugar came in sacks, so you had to weigh up little bags of it. And, you know, before I was 8 or 9, I was able to pull pints of Guinness and all of that. So I learned all kinds of skills.
Good skills to have. And then exactly. You ended up in the kitchens.
Yeah, so then so basically the nuns were, this sort of not even subliminal message was, well, why would you want to do that, my dear? You're never going to need to cook or to grow or anything like that, you know. Why, you know, you're going to be a career woman. So anyway, I insisted. So basically they said, well, it has to be a degree in horticulture or hotel management. So basically I opted for hotel management, eventually got into Carlbrew Street in Dublin on the second count, because when I went along there was an entrance exam, and for the first time ever, I saw an IQ test. And basically there's a technique in doing an IQ test. I don't know whether all the rest of you know that or not. You probably would have known it, but I had no idea how to put all those little triangles into circles and all that. And I didn't. So as a result, they put a line through my thing, but somebody dropped out and I got in. But and that's it. So anyway, then at the end of that course, there was another dilemma then. So I couldn't get into a top restaurant. You know, men were chefs and women just ran tea shops or something. And so, and the sort of job that my classmates had close to the end of the course, I was virtually the only person who still hadn't got a job, and was to be a system manager in the Gresham or in the Russell or Shelburne or something. Sometimes you never know what it is in your life that can change the course of the rest of your life. And for me, it was close to the end of the course, one of the senior lecturers met me in the corridor and asked why I hadn't got a job, considering everybody else had. And I told her that I wanted to learn how to cook more. Somehow I had this fixation about homemade ice cream. And so she said to me, funny, I had dinner the other night with a friend, and they were talking about this woman down in Cork who they've opened a restaurant in their own house. You know, it's out in a farm right out in the country, and she writes the menu every day, depending on what they have in the garden. This was now, by the way, all in incredulous tones, you know. I mean, why would you? I mean, when restaurants opened at that time, they wrote the menu was the same 10 years later. So the whole idea of actually writing a menu every day was considered to be incredibly amateurish. So anyway, and she said, well, now that you think of it, they make their own ice cream, and they have a 2-acre walled garden, you know, and greenhouses and all that sort of thing. And I couldn't believe my ears. It was like Santa Claus ticking all the boxes. But she couldn't remember her name. So she said, look, I'll go back to my friend. And she came back a few days later and she with a piece of paper, and she handed it to me. She said, that's the name of the woman, write to her. And the name on the piece of paper was Myrtle Allen, who within a year and a half became my mother-in-law. So I became the member of the family by the simple expedient of marrying the boss. Son. That's how you do it. So that's it. Yeah. And then we went on to have 4 children. And then eventually we started a cooking school on a second farm, which we were very fortunate. We inherited a lovely house and 100-acre farm around it, about 2 miles from Bamboo House, with the horticultural unit on it, because my husband was a horticulturalist. And then that was fine. We employed about 100 people and everything. And then the late 70s, some of you may remember, there was another big recession at that time. There was the oil crisis, 25% inflation. We'd just gone into the EU. There was the whole supermarkets had come on stream. And then there was this cheap food policy started to kick in. Labour costs started to rise very significantly at that time too. More and more, we were getting less and less for our produce every time we took it. And then this, you know, we were concerned, but we thought maybe that was just a blip. But then at that stage, we had 4 kids. I left a little bit out. When I was at boarding school, I had no ambition whatsoever to be a businesswoman or an entrepreneur, any of those kind of things. I'd never heard the word entrepreneur. I just wanted to find a nice chap, really, preferably with a bit of money. And, you know, then I'd have a few cute kids and I'd pick my nails and we'd go on picnics and all of that. So I had absolutely no ambition whatsoever.
She's 19 books in. Like, two
no, but like, this is true. This is absolutely true. So then there was this like crisis, you know. So what would we do? Because we were seriously looking at losing the roof over our heads, actually. So then somebody said, forget about the wholesalers, you know, go to the supermarkets. They're the new thing. So we got a contract with one of the big supermarket chains in Ireland, which shall be nameless because they're still very successful supermarkets in Ireland, for apples. And we, you know, would very carefully grade the apples, and Timmy would head off in the morning at 6:30 or something to take them into Cork. And then somehow or other, we never seemed to get paid for what was said on the contract. And then very often something would come back because they found a bruise on something, even though we were very careful, we were very high standard. Anyway, this went on for a bit. So eventually, Timmy, I remember we had this lovely moment every day. I'd got the kids off to school and he'd have gone to Cork early and he'd come back and we'd have breakfast together. We used to look forward to that every day. And I remember one day he came home from Cork, came in through the kitchen door looking even more despondent than usual. And he said, I don't care if I have to crawl on my knees. I'm not doing that again. We have to find a different way to earn a living. I often joke that he put me out to work, but it wasn't quite like that, because we had to think, what the dickens can we do? Well, yeah, I started the farm shop. Maybe that was the first farm shop in Ireland, I think, actually. Loved that. We did that for a couple of years, but we never made enough money to justify the work that went into it. Then I tidied out a few extra bedrooms and bundled the children all into one bedroom. And then I'd take overflow from Ballymaloe in the summer. You know, that was great because you got 4.50 a night for that. But then anyway, after that, we decided the thing was to, I'd been helping Myrtle, my mother-in-law, to actually, she would decide in the winter to try and fill some of the bedrooms of Bamaloo in the quiet time. So basically, I would help her with those. And she was always, you know, she'd say, what do you think, Doreen, and so on. And then she decided, so people loved those and would come back every year from Cork. They would come out in their lovely BMWs and little fur jackets and we'd hide our rusty Renault 4L around the back. And then she, if you don't mind, decided to open a restaurant in Paris. It was called La Ferme Landaise, as a shop window for Irish food, because we had lots of French visitors to Bamaloo. They loved the food at Ballymaloe and they loved the salmon and they loved the Bramley apples and all of that. She headed off to open a restaurant in Paris at a time in Ireland when we had such an inferiority complex about our food. But Myrtle knew the quality of the produce we had and really, really believed it. So off she headed to Paris, opened a restaurant. We needed desperately needed money. So people kept asking for the cooking classes and Myrtle said, well, why don't you go ahead and do them? And I thought, well, nobody knows me. Nobody will come to me. And
I love the way that you behave as if everything is kind of
happened to you,
but it did just happen to me.
Well,
no, it did just happen to me.
Nothing just happens to Doreena. And her, you know.
No, but it's like totally true. That did happen. But we needed the money. I tell you what, desperation is a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
You know, if your back is to the wall, it's amazing what you can do. And I really say that the school was born out of desperation, actually, out of having to find a different way to earn a living. So anyway, I started doing little courses on a Saturday morning, and then a friend of mine said, look, why don't you open a residential cooking school? There's no residential cooking school in Ireland. Some people are going to the Cordon Bleu in London or Paris. You're in the middle of a farm and all of this, all that lovely produce. Maybe some people might come.
The main focus or the main thing that we were so impressed by is this kind of aspect that everything is about produce. And if you have good produce, everything else that you do is amazing, which is why I want you to read that little piece. And then we're going to talk a bit about...
I'm just trying to. No, I didn't lose it, but this book was published in 2013, actually. It's called 30 Years at Ballina.
Your ethos on produce is very much stayed the same, right?
Yeah, but it's so long since I've looked at the intro. But so anyway, over the past few years, I've become more and more concerned about the quality of the food we eat. Food is the fuel for our bodies. If you don't put good petrol in the tank, the car won't perform properly. It's ironic that so many of us care for our cars and motorbikes much better than ourselves. We wouldn't dream of putting inferior oil or petrol in them. Yet we shovel any kind of old rubbish into our bodies and then wonder why we're low in energy, sluggish or lacking in concentration. For most people, the only criteria when choosing food is price. Never before have we spent so small a percentage of our income on food. The truth is that very few people connect the food they eat with how they feel. If we did, we would make it a greater priority. I haven't really changed my mind.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, I can take the book from you.
Yeah.
But I think that's so true and so amazing. And I think that people leave with that understanding that if you cook good food and you take care of yourself and your body, then everything, you know, everything around hopefully matches into that.
Well, now a lot of particularly young people know much more about the lives of celebrities than they know about how their food is produced. Yeah. But you're right when they, you know, I have 3 months to actually indoctrinate them when they come. But actually, in a way, it's not just a cooking school. It's also a way of life, an introduction to a particular way of life. And I'm always encouraging them to try and grow something themselves as well. Or else if they're starting a restaurant, to try and build up a network of small producers and farmers that they buy from, because then you know where a lot of the food comes from. And I know we're out in the country, but you can do that anywhere, really. Yeah. At the moment, I think on the 55 people on the payroll at the cooking school on a 100-acre organic farm. And that's definitely a record, because most farmers sort of talk about how few people they have to employ. Everything is mechanized. But actually, do you know something? We're delighted to be able to create employment. We live in a tiny country village, and it makes a big difference to our local community. It's a really vibrant, rocking area. Hey, the other thing is we have so many romances. I think we're better than Tinder any day. No, but probably. I mean, only about 3 weeks ago, this is like the third student that's brought their girlfriend that they met at Ballymaloe back to Ballymaloe to actually propose. And fortunately, they all said yes. So that was good. But the way to everybody's heart is still through their tummies.
Yeah, still through food. Because we're focusing very much on women, do you... Uh-huh. A lot of women work at the school?
Oh, yes. Well, at one stage, I had predominantly women. We have a few more chaps and everything now. So we have one teacher with every 6 students, actually. Probably the highest teacher-student ratio of any cooking school. A lot of the time, it's 1 to 15 or 1 to 20 or something. I don't know how they do it. Our thing is very intensive. It's like gastro boot camp. But they absolutely love it. I mean, there are students in at like 6 in the morning going into the bread shed to make totally natural sourdough that's fermented for 48 hours. They're out in the fermentation shed. They go down to the dairy to milk the cows. That's all extracurricular stuff, by the way. So that's, they choose to do these extra things as well. Otherwise, they come in at the latest at 8:30 in the morning, and then they finish about 6 in the evening. Then sometimes there might be charcuterie or butchery or something in the evening afterwards. So they really work hard and they love it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And on the very first morning, actually, on the three-month course, first thing I do is introduce them to the gardeners and to the farm manager. And I say to them often, if I can get a bunch of carrots or beet or something, I say to them, look at this bunch of carrots. It took Eileen 3 months to grow those carrots. And don't you dare boil the hell out of them when you get them into the kitchen. And then we go down to the farm and gardens, past the hens and the pigs and the cattle and all the rest of it, to the herb garden. We have a lovely formal herb garden. And then down to the greenhouses. And the first thing I show them how to do is how to sow a seed. And then they plant a plant into the ground. It depends on the time of the year. It could be a sweet corn on the last term, or it could be a lettuce or something. And then they plant that into the ground. It's like kindergarten. They get a little lollipop stick. They put their name on it. They watch that growing for the next 12 weeks. And the penny drops about how long it takes for something to grow. If we have some big crisis, you can't just spirit stuff onto the supermarket shelves. If you grow something yourself and you wait for it to grow into something, you'll never complain about the price of food again. Mm-hmm. You won't want to waste a single scrap. This is another really important lesson. This was always the way my generation were. You know, waste wasn't an option. I mean, you just... So that it also makes them want to use every part of the beetroot, every part of the carrot. And they want to hug every farmer they see. So I'm, yeah, and I'm always looking out for strong farmers with combine harvesters for my students. And to keep life in the country and all of that as well. Because I love the country. I love living in the country. I feel very fortunate to live on a farm. Yeah.
It's a very lovely place to live. Do you think the world of food for women is changing?
Really, it has changed so much from the time, as I mentioned earlier, where I literally could not count, nobody would even think about letting a woman into a kitchen. That was in the late 60s, to the now where, of course, there are fortunately more women in restaurant kitchens. You know, we've made a lot of progress, but there's still much to be done still. Also, that whole Me Too movement there last year, that was actually, sadly, was very timely, because basically there was never in Ballymaloe, because my mother-in-law was always, she didn't even call herself head chef, but there was always and still is a lovely atmosphere in that kitchen of encouragement and support. But there was a really not good kitchen culture in many kitchens. And, you know, people were told to suck it up. It's just kitchen culture. Nowadays, it is no longer acceptable. And that's good progress. Yeah. And then it makes it easier for women to be in restaurant kitchens as well.
For sure.
Yeah.
I cook tonight from your new book. one pot feeds all. What did I cook? I cooked a really, really lovely giant couscous salad with carrots and cranberries and cashew nuts and lots of really good things. It's really delicious. And actually, as I was starting to cook it, I was thinking that for me, giant couscous is kind of like a comfort food when I was a kid, but this takes it to a completely different level, which is really nice. You know, I couldn't stop eating it.
That's a good sign.
Yeah. And then a nice big tray bake. The fun thing is, this is easy. This is quite...
I know you're going to chide me about this again, but I feel I've been so fortunate in so many ways, because all I could do really and wanted to do was to cook. And something that the nuns, the very strong message from the nuns, not even subliminal message, was, look, concentrate on academic skills, on the STEM subjects, as they call them now, science and things. You're never going to need to be able to cook. But that, with that one skill of being able to cook and so on, I've had the best fun. I've had, you know, so many opportunities to do television and books, all sorts of things. And also I get to teach people how to cook every day. And, you know, I can see your eyes glazing over and thinking, well, hey, how about that for excitement? But for I could be teaching algebra or geometry or something. And I mean, very important, but basically it's not like teaching somebody how to make a loaf of bread or a bowl of soup or something. You're giving somebody, it's like giving people a gift for life, actually, or giving them a skill that they can, you know, go on and earn their living from. So I feel so fortunate to be have found something where I love going out to work every day. And I only have to go across my yard, literally, from the house over to the cooking school. It's about 3 minutes to work. So I'm very fortunate to have found a way eventually to earn a living on the farm that we love and the land that we love. But basically this book, and as you say, it's my 19th book, we've been doing a One Pot Wonders course at the cooking school for the last maybe 8 or 9 years. And it's always, absolutely always full. Anyway, and in the meantime, people just get busier and busier. So I dedicated this book, One Pot Feeds All, which has been bubbling away in my subconscious for several years now, to all the heroic young people who are dashing home from work, you know, every evening, battling through the traffic and, you know, picking up the kids in the crèche and dashing into the supermarket to try and get a few ingredients and desperately still wanting to cook something delicious for supper. And how you guys keep all the balls in the air, I'm just in awe. So that book is dedicated. If that's ringing bells with anybody, it's dedicated to you. So I'm hoping that, you know, everything in the book can be cooked in one pot, one roasting tin, one baking tray. So I'm hoping that this book is a little part of the solution for some people at least.
It's lovely because you do go kind of across the globe a bit and give a lot of different flavors, but how to do it quickly and at home.
Well, with my cooking, I've also had the opportunity to travel all over the world, and food is my subject, so everywhere I go it's research. How about that? We like that, don't we?
We're going to thank Darina so much for a lovely conversation.
That interview was part of our series Who Run the World, celebrating women in food. Thanks to our guest Darina Allen. Thank you also to all the incredible women of Honey & Co, especially Louisa Cornford. She helps us with everything podcast, and to Miranda Hinckley, the producer. Drop us an email with your thoughts, feedbacks, questions. You can email us at podcast@honeyandco.co.uk, or you can find us on social media at Honey & Co. We'd absolutely love to hear from you. Click subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to get the rest of the series. See you next time.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.